good evening, everybody. It's 7 o'clock. This is the first regular city commission meeting since our election, so things are a little bit out of our normal routine. I'll be running a meeting for the first four items on the agenda. I'd like to call the meeting to order. If you could all please rise and stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Cindy, roll call, please.
Conklin?
Here.
Brunch?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Page?
Here.
Solomon?
Here.
Quorum present.
With regards to the election, Cindy, can we have a report of the election, please?
Absolutely. We had 460 voters vote a week ago today, which is roughly 16% to 17% turnout of our registered voters. The results were Hugh Conklin, 310, Thomas Needhammer, 292, and Barbara Malpas-Young had 217 votes. And these were all for four-year terms, beginning now and running through 2023. I know, I think that through. So it was a very successful election. This facility works beautifully to hold those elections. And if you have any other questions, we have answers.
Okay, and since we had two city commission positions open, the top two candidates received the highest number of votes were declared, and they had the official notification of
yes, the Board of Canvassers met Friday, and I have the official results right here, the certified results.
I think the next function would be for you to administer the oath of office to those two highest vote getters.
I can do that.
If you have them, please stand to come to the front.
I solemnly swear that I will support the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of this state, and that I will faithfully perform the duties of the Office of City Commissioner in and for the City of Boyne City, County of Charlevoix, and State of Michigan, according to the best of my ability.
I will.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations. So I just need... So I need each of you to sign.
You have an official City of Boyne City.
What are your official accounting pads?
Where are we sending?
Yes, one of you in the papers.
We're both lefties.
Yeah. Creative people.
And we have to sign our name.
Okay. Congratulations, you.
City. Tom's a nearly lifelong resident of Boyne City, and in that time, there's been many other accomplishments that have right around 30 years of experience serving Boyne City in a variety of ways in the last 4 years as mayor. I think many will agree that Tom's been an outstanding mayor during that period of time. He's also consistently praised for the excellent way that he represents the city, and meetings with colleagues, and then in a variety of functions here in the city. And he's really very, very effective at leading our meetings in our team of commissioners, and has been for some time. In fact, there's been more than one occasion when folks have mentioned to me that, gee, they wish their meetings were as well run as they are here in Boyne City. You know, and finally, I don't think there's anyone who's as enthusiastic about Boyne City as Tom is. In fact, if you were to ask Tom how are things going in Boyne City, you might get more than you bargained for in enthusiastic reports of all of our accomplishments over the years. He never misses an opportunity to be a great advocate for our city. For those reasons, I'm happy to nominate him as our mayor.
I'd be happy to second that.
Okay, we have a nomination and a support of the nomination for Tom Needhammer as our mayor. Are there any other nominations?
I call for the vote.
Okay. All in favor of Tom Needhammer as mayor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Congratulations, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
The second item that we have with regards to elections is the election of the mayor pro tem. This person substitutes for the mayor in case the mayor is unavailable or incapacitated in some way. Are there any nominations for the position of mayor pro tem?
Are you interested in continuing, Ron?
Yes.
I nominate Ron Rush as mayor pro tem.
And I would second that.
Okay, we have a nomination and a support for Ron Grunch as mayor pro tem. Are there any other nominations? Hearing no other nominations, I call the questions. All in favor of electing Ron Grunch as mayor pro tem, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign. Congratulations, Ron, mayor pro tem. Tom, I now return the meeting back to you.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate the confidence. I feel that there is no such thing as term limits, but I kind of feel like I'm only partway, only 4 years and maybe another 4 years here, or 2 years at least. So for the next 2 years, I would be honored, and I appreciate the support. And Ron, welcome aboard.
And I do also.
I think we're good. I think the five of us are a good team, so. Moving on to the consent agenda, it's quite lengthy here, and for the record, I need to read it. I'll please bear with us. The purpose of the consent agenda is to expedite business by putting non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any item or items on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will be automatically respected. We have approval of the October 22nd City Commission regular meeting minutes as presented. We have approval of the resolution for charitable gaming licenses for Great Lakes Energy annual holiday party raffle, and authorize the city clerk to complete the resolution. We have approval of the recommendation of the Historical Commission to appoint Oscar Barden to the Boyne City Historical Commission for a 3-year term expiring June 30th, 2022. We have approval of the recommendation of the Historical Commission to reappoint Michelle Hewitt to a 2-year term expiring June 30th, 2021. We have approval of the recommendation of the Historical Commission to reappoint Lisa Alexander to a 3-year term expiring June 30th, 2022. We have approval of the recommendation of the Historical Commission to reappoint Serena Dawson to a 3-year term expiring June 30th, 2022. We have approval to purchase 4 Generation 7 128 gigabyte iPads and 4 Defender Series Otter boxes for a total of $2,075.80, and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. We have approval of a purchase order contract with Landscape Forums for the purchase of 8 park benches and 6 memorial plaques in the amount not to exceed $13,128.32, and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. We have approval of a purchase order contract with Site One Landscape Supply of Petoskey for the purchase of 4 30 packs of 15-gallon tree watering bags in the amount not to exceed $2,160, and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. We have approval to authorize a purchase order contract with the Dynamic Group to purchase 2 replacement luminaries and 2 head modules. Right?
Close enough.
And an amount not to exceed $2,620, and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. Those are actually our streetlights. Approval to award a contract for design services for the Pine Street Storm Sewer and Resurfacing Project in the amount not to exceed $8,900 for the proposed date November 1st, 2019, and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. And approval to authorize the contract with Northern Michigan Excavators for the 2019-20 winter season for snow removal and salting services at City Hall and the Boyne River Boardwalk in the amount not to exceed $11,000, and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. And approval of the revised Public Act 210 resolution for the loss on Lake Street as requested by the state, and authorize the city manager and or city clerk treasurer to submit it and any other necessary materials required. Is there any items of all of those listed from the public or the staff or the commission that would be warrant further discussion?
I'd make a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, thank you. Moving on to hearing citizen comments on non-agenda items.
Yes, sir. Just state name. Derek Schroeder, 910 East Main Street. I'd like to comment on the policies of hauling snow to the airport during the overnight hours, specifically Sunday through Thursday, school nights. I think there should be some quiet hours up there, 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. on those nights. It's just too much. The kids can't sleep and so forth. There's no rules or regulations. Last year, they hauled Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 3 nights in a row. It's just getting to be too much. And it's not a necessity. I went down where they were hauling at the grocery store, and on the third night, they're pulling snow off the hillside, tree branches, trash, whatever they could do to fill the trucks. The parking lot was clear, the pharmacy was clear, the shipping lanes for the tractor trailers are clear. It's just too much. There needs to be something done.
Thank you. We've had, as you know, we've had discussion on this with you in past years, so I would normally refer this over to staff, but I'll do it right now with my comment.
Yeah, just a brief update. Obviously, we knew winter season was coming up, and Tim and I have had numerous conversations with regards to concerns last year and trying to avoid a repeat of that, and he will be bringing a revised policy to the City Commission in short order.
Okay, thank you. Any other public comments? Non-agenda items? Thank you. Moving on to correspondence. We have notice of intent to prepare a master plan from Eveline Township, and correspondence from Michigan Municipal League regarding elected officials training. Anything else, Mike?
You have another piece of correspondence at your places today, but that with regards to item 11B on our agenda.
Okay. Okay, let's move on to the city manager's report, Mike.
A few construction updates. The Terry Street reconstruction project is winding down for the season. The base pavement has been installed and should be good to get us through the winter. The asphalt plant shut down last Friday before the top coat could be installed. 10 of the 12 new water service leads have been installed. The remaining two, which are going to have to be bored instead of open cut to minimize impact to the buildings there, are scheduled to be installed shortly. The pavilion project continues to move forward. The foundations for the covered area, the new covered areas on the east side of the building are in, and the dewatering system is out. Interior partition framing for the kitchen and storage areas have been erected, and the new natural gas service has been ordered and should be installed soon, and that'll support the heating and other systems in the building. The Boyne Valley Trail project, which will run between the airport and the village of Boyne Falls, like many projects, is slowed with the onset of the winter weather. The contractor is still making some progress there. They're mainly working on installing supports for the new boardwalk that will be going in basically on the south side of the Boyne Mountain Airport. So that's the update on that. Since our last meeting, 101 trees have been planted in and around the city. So our tree planting program for this year has taken place. The winter newsletter, and there's a copy of it at each of the commission places, and also there's a few of them outside the door if people are interested, has been printed and is ready to be distributed with our December 1st tax bill mailing. So again, additional copies are available if somebody wants to read it in advance of that mailing. Attached for the City Commission's reference is the draft of our sidewalk snow plowing map for this coming winter season. The map more accurately reflects what was done last year. There are no significant changes in coverage areas from last winter. Thursday of this week, the large holiday decorations are scheduled to be installed around the city. You may have already noticed the another year of enhanced downtown street lighting, courtesy of our Main Street program. Chief Spate is preparing a designee for our marijuana task force. Once he informs me of that person has been selected, I will contact all the members of that group to set up our initial meeting. At the commission's places is a memo regarding moving forward with the adoption of the International Property Maintenance Code. The commission's had some discussions on that, and Scott, primarily with a little assistance of myself, have been meeting with the city attorney to get that matter prepared to bring it to the city commission. It will be discussed at next week's planning commission meeting, and if time allows, we hope that we might have a few minutes to talk about it at our Tuesday 19th work session after the non-motorized discussion takes place. And we're hoping to be able to maybe have a little bit of discussion with both the Planning Commission and the City Commission present. At this point, we are looking to potentially hold a separate work session in early December to discuss this matter more fully, with a possible formal introduction of the ordinance dealing with this, possibly at our December 10th meeting. You may have noticed the monitors are still dark, and I hate to sound like a broken record, but our IT contractor is waiting for the last piece of hardware to arrive. It was supposed to be here today, but the company hasn't provided it yet. But I do expect it to be up and running. Well, I hope it's going to be up and running at our next meeting. I'm not going to make any promises I can't keep. So if you have any questions on these or other items, I'd be glad to try and address them.
Good. Okay. You're welcome. Moving on to reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. In our packets for our benefit is all of the meetings, minutes, so that we can stay up to date with all of our boards. So we have in our packets the draft minutes from the October 1st Zoning Board of Appeals meeting. We have the draft minutes from the October 3rd Main Street Board meeting. We have the draft minutes from the October 10th Parks and Recreation Commission meeting. We have the draft minutes from the October 14th EDC meeting. And the draft minutes from the October 14th LDFA meeting. And the draft minutes from the October 21st Planning Commission meeting. And the draft minutes from the October 21st Historical Commission meeting, and the draft minutes from the October 24th Airport Advisory Board meeting. Commissioners, are there any questions? or discussion? Okay, moving on to old business, we have none. Yes, Mike?
And this isn't a matter of old business, but there was one item I wanted to address in my city manager's report, and I overlooked it, if I may, for a second.
Please.
Also, right outside the door is a copy of the Boynton City Parks and Recreation Plan Survey. We're out selecting, or gathering public input with regards to updates to our recreation master plan, and we're specifically working on plans for the open space and avalanche. If anybody's interested in this, they can get a copy outside the meeting room tonight and complete and return it to us. So, sorry about that, out of order.
No problem, thank you. Moving on to new business, we have with us from Neighbors and Company, we have Joe Berman, who will present the financial 2019 financial report, the audits.
Good evening. I would like to thank the Board of Commissioners for allowing us to serve as your auditor. Very much a pleasure, working with the staff of the city. They do a wonderful job of providing us with the information that we need in order to perform the audit engagement. And we're able to go through and verify the revenues and expenditures and assets and liabilities of the city for the year ended April 30, 2019. And accordingly, we rendered what is referred to as a clean opinion. And you can find the clean opinion on page 12, on the opinion paragraph. What that means is that the financial statements present fairly in all material respects the financial position of the city as of April 30, 2019. It should always be the city's goal to receive the clean opinion, but it does mean something to earn the clean opinion. We have had larger organizations that have received either adverse or modified opinions. Essentially, it means that controls are suitably designed and they're being carried out effectively on a day-to-day basis to make sure that the financial statements are prepared accurately and timely. One other thing that I will point out, if you go back to page 7, there is a certificate of achievement for excellence in financial reporting, and this was the third year in a row that the city has received this certificate. What it means is that the entire audit report, the introductory letters, statistical information, two of those three sections are voluntary, are put together and submitted to the Government Finance Officers Association on an annual basis. They review it. There's three reviewers that look at it from other states, and if they feel that it meets all the criteria, they provide this award. And it's really kudos to the staff. This is something that they've done just to demonstrate the quality of the work they put into this audit report. In the state of Michigan, there are over 1,700 local units of government, and 65 of them participate in this program. So less than 4%. It's certainly holds the city apart from other communities in the state of Michigan. It is just them demonstrating that their willingness to go above and beyond to demonstrate their commitment to quality in financial reporting. Now, if we go to page 15, we get into the management discussion and analysis section of the audit report. And I would think of this section as being the cliff note version of the entire audit. This is about 10 pages of financial highlights. We get to see some comparative data so we can see what the revenues and expenses look like for each of the past 2 years. Just so we get a little bit of an idea of what the trends look like at the city. And it also has narrative that explains how all of these various financial statements throughout the 130 pages relate to each other. So I'll go through these financial highlights on page 15. The first one shows that assets exceed liabilities by basically $29.9 million as of April 30, 2019. A lot of that includes infrastructure of the city, streets, buildings, non-spendable items, equipment. So it's not necessarily how much the city has available to spend, but it is one measure of looking at the finances of the city as of at the end of the fiscal year. We do like to see that number trending up over time, and that was an increase over the prior fiscal year. The second bullet point down shows the fund balances of the city. So if we back off the non-spendable items and all the illiquid infrastructure assets, we get what's referred to as fund balance. And the fund balance is showing $3,326,836 as of April 30, 2019. a much better representation of what the true liquidity is for the city. And that is across all of the governmental funds as of April 30, 2019. That number is actually a decrease during the year of about $325,000, which we don't like to see a decrease in fund balance, but over $4 million was expended during 2019 on various capital projects, including the lakefront property as well as other infrastructure and projects that were initiated during the year. And the third bullet point shows the unassigned fund balance of the general fund. Any local unit of government, the general fund is going to be the most important fund, and that has an unassigned fund balance of $2,030,706. If we divide that by the annualized expenditures of the city has 31.7% of set aside to cover the cost of operating the city. So that's available to cover the cost of wages, utilities, supplies. We like to see that number north of 17%. The city's at 31.7%, basically about 4 months worth of reserves to cover the cash gaps throughout the course of the year. So not too much, not too little, a very stable financial condition for the general fund as of April 30, 2019. Next, if you turn to page 19, we get a look at the comparative assets and liabilities for the last couple of years. Just one item that I wanted to point out here, the very bottom row, the total net position. It shows the total net position. So as of April 30, 2018, the very bottom row, the very last column, was $25.5 million. So if we take all the assets back off all the liabilities, $25.5 million, that number increased up to $29.9 million as of April 30, 2019. So we do like to see net position increasing. Again, that's not necessarily how much is spendable, but we do like to see that number trending up over time. And if you turn one more page to page 19, we get a look at the revenues and the expenses of the city for the last two fiscal years. And really the big thing that jumps out here are the capital grants of approximately $2.7 million. That was primarily grants from the Michigan Department of Natural Resources for the free space land that was purchased. And accordingly, if you look at the total primary government, three rows up from the bottom, altogether, there's about a $4.2 million increase in net position, with basically $2.7 million of it coming from those capital grants. So that certainly had a positive impact on the overall financial position of the city as of April 30, 2019. If you turn to page 30, we get into the fund financial statements. This is a much shorter term focus on the finances of the city as of April 30, 2019. So we don't have any long-term liabilities. We don't have any long-term assets included on here. We're just looking at the immediate resources compared to the immediate liabilities. Sometimes I'll explain this, you know, the same way my wife and I look at our checking account at the end of the year. If we have more in our checking account at the end of the year than we did at the beginning of the year, it was a good year. That's kind of what this measurement focus is. We're looking at what are the immediate resources compared to those immediate obligations. General fund, first column, shows the unassigned fund balance, as I mentioned, of $2,030,706. And all the other funds of the city are showing positive fund balances as well. So not only is the general fund in stable condition, the other funds of the city are in stable financial condition as well. Turn two more pages to page 32. We get a look at the revenues and the expenditures of the city during the year ended April 30, 2019. And again, general fund is the first column. About $6.2 million of revenues came in, cash came in, compared to about $6.1 million of expenditures, and another $300,000 was transferred out of the general fund during the year to cover various city projects, primarily street projects. Altogether, about a $200,000 decrease in the general fund. But again, the biggest piece of that being the transfers out for various projects, and another $3.45 million expended on the free space project, as well as other capital outlays during the year. If you look at the last column, total governmental funds had a decrease in fund balance of $324,811. And again, there were other capital improvement projects in the other funds. Altogether, about $4.1 million was expended on those capital projects. somewhat one nature, one time in nature, and that is the ultimate reason for that decrease in fund balance. If you turn out on page 35, we get a look at the water and sewer funds of the city for the year ended April 30, 2019. And about halfway down, we can see the operating income for the year. And in the sewer fund, the revenues minus the expenses equals operating income of about $464,000. The next column over shows about $224,000 of operating income for the water fund. Altogether, about $687,000 of operating income across the water and sewer funds, which is important. There's debt service, there's long-term debt that needs to be paid out of those funds. There's various infrastructure improvements that are coming down the pipeline that will need to happen to keep the system compliant and working properly. So having revenues in excess of expenses is important, and the city does have that to the tune of about $687,000 last fiscal year. Just a couple more schedules. If you turn now all the way to page 7, we get into the required supplemental information section of the audit report. This is now the fourth year that the city has been reporting its net pension liability. Prior to the city reporting the net pension liability, it was simply a footnote disclosure and information that was included in the required supplemental information, that section of the audit report. This schedule is showing the total pension liability, the amount of resources that have been set aside to cover that total pension liability, and the difference, which is net pension liability. Here we can see total pension liability, and about a third of the way down on the page, was $8.6 million. And that's the total cost to be able to provide benefits to all eligible employees who are eligible to receive the pension benefits. To cover that liability, the plan fiduciary net position shows $6.63 million, which is about two-thirds of the way down this schedule. So the city has set aside over the course of time about $6.6 million with MERS in order to be able to provide that benefit, those pension benefits to the eligible employees. And the difference between those two numbers, the assets and liabilities, is $1.975 million. And that was included on the financial statements as the overall net pension liability. If we take the total assets and divide it by the total liabilities, the city's 77.06% funded, and that is 17 points better than what Treasury expects local units to be at least 60% funded. Boeing City's at 77%, so in a very stable financial position in terms of being able to cover that long-term pension liability. The one thing that I did want to point out here is that the city actually had a net investment loss, or actually I should say MERS, had a net investment loss on the city's retirement assets. You can see that about halfway down the page. That's because the stock market in 2018, in particular the fourth quarter of 2018, had a dramatic loss on assets. That decreased the assets that the city had at its disposal to cover those retirement liabilities by $275,021. Compared to the prior year, 2017, which had the $852,000 increase on pension assets. There is some ebb and flow to that. Obviously, some years are going to have better returns than other years, but that certainly was had an impact in 2018 on the city's 2019 net pension liability. But even with that, the city is still 17 points better funded than what the minimum level is established by Treasury. And, those are the highlights, and I'm certainly happy to answer any further questions that commissioners might have.
Thank you, Joe. Commissioners, any questions?
Mike? Just a comment. I think we said this earlier. We had a two-hour session with Joe, so we've seen as much audit as we care to see today. It's a ton of information and a very useful document, I think, for those who want to delve into the other thing. So thanks very much for all your efforts to present the information that's really new to us, that you're really new to us. And the other thing I learned today is that on our city website, there's some similar information about the financial picture of the city, but in a little bit more digestible form, like up arrows and down arrows and nice pie charts that would make it easier for most people to get a picture than having to wade through all. I don't know, 8,000 pages of this?
Yeah, it feels like 8,000.
A lot of this. So we do have that information available on an easier format as well. Thanks.
Anyone else? Any comments from staff or the public? Thank you, Joe.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yes, Mike.
I just let people know that there are copies of the audit. They are available online on the city's website if you do want to dig into it. We have a paper copy here if people want to come and look at it. And we also have copies of our audits and our budget books available at the library for people to look at there as well, too.
Okay. I think you safe travels. You better hit the road.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
On to item B, stormwater control ordinance, second reading.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, this is the second reading of stormwater control ordinance, as you may recall from our discussion at the first reading. This ordinance basically replaces the ordinance that was a countywide ordinance that was repealed in 2006 due to the Attorney General opinion. Shortly thereafter, the townships working with the county and the Met began working on developing a new ordinance that could be adopted by each municipality. They come to an agreement on the ordinance in 2012. Most of the townships in the county did adopt that ordinance and entered into an agreement with the county to administer and enforce it. At that time, the three cities in the county had some reservations about it, as it didn't seem to adequately address the unique characteristics of the city and its developed nature as opposed to the more rural townships. But the townships and the city continued working together on that, and through the SAW grant giving us the ability to use some funding to help develop the ordinance, and we worked together to develop a new one. Basically, it was modeled after the countywide ordinance and the township ordinances that were adopted, with some tweaks to kind of address the unique characteristics of the city. So now this will be brought to you for a second reading into consideration for adoption. The cities of Charlevoix and East Jordan are going through the similar process, and we hope to be able to save the cost for each by publishing once as opposed to three different times. We did discuss this with Tiffany Mitt and Vanetta Thomasy. She regrets she couldn't come to the meeting tonight as she still has some difficulty driving at night, but she did submit a letter of support. I apologize, that was supposed to be in the packets and I forgot to attach it to my report, but a copy was put in your place tonight and it was also attached to the agenda packet on that. So if there's any specific questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
What's the timeline of this second reading?
If it's adopted tonight, it could be effective within 15 days of publication. So we anticipate publishing as soon as we can if it is adopted.
Okay, thank you.
Scott, have the two other communities approved it on first reading?
Yes.
Is there any comments from staff or the public? Okay, we'll go to board deliberation. Rob?
Well, it's a very comprehensive document, and the burden for enforcing it will go back to the county, and they will also collect the fees for doing it, so it's not an additional expense to us, but it does give us control as far as the areas that we can control on Lake Charlevoix, and I think it's well written, and I think it's been vetted very good as far as our attorneys go, and I'm supporting it.
Thank you, Ron. Dean?
Yeah, I think it's well written as well, and it's a good thing for us to do. I also really think it's a good thing that not only are all the townships kind of, most of the townships kind of in on it, but the three cities together will have consistent language. So I think we benefit to not only the cities and the townships, but also to developers in the area. They don't need a consistent set of regulations wherever they're within the county that they're developing. That's an excellent thing. I wonder, you know, Connecticut to join us tonight, obviously. But I wanted to give an opportunity for a representative of Tiblin to join us sometime, talk a little bit more about stormwater and next steps and some of the challenges that we may face with the shoreline if water levels continue to go up and some of the strategies they might recommend as well.
I can reach out to them and ask them.
Great.
Thank you, Dean. Sal?
Okay. Good. Yeah, good as well. But Scott, was there any other comment received other than Granetta's letter between?
From no other comments.
Yeah, I fully support this.
I'm in support also. It's another tool to keep Lake Charlevoix clean, so, which is one of our city goals. At this point, I would entertain a motion.
Move to approve the stormwater management ordinance as proposed.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunge?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Moving on to item C, housing barrier amendments. First reading, Scott?
Thank you, Mayor. In accordance with our goals to increase housing availability, the City Commission tasked the Planning Department and the County Commission with reviewing the ordinance and master plan to identify potential barriers to developing housing. The Planning Commission worked on that through the summer and developed a series of proposed amendments that they felt that would help address in some ways to alleviate some of those barriers and need to be brought to you for the first reading tonight. So I'll kind of go through these. If you have a question during it, please ask me. Proposed amendments would be to the definitions section. In there are several different amendments to several different definitions. The first being dwelling manufactured home. In there, we eliminated some specific language to the requirements of the National Manufactured Housing Construction and Safety Standards Act. And replace that with that must be in compliance with all applicable codes as classified as a dwelling. Given we're talking about different types of dwellings being a manufactured home to include mobile home, manufactured home, modular home, there may be different ordinances and laws addressing each one, so I thought it would be a better fit as some specific catch-all as opposed to a specific language. And then we also identify mobile home, modular home, and manufactured home as manufactured dwellings. We look at the dwelling mobile home. There is two different definitions that identify mobile home. So we deleted the reference to see mobile home manufactured housing. We leave that reference to that definition altogether. And then change modular home to dwelling modular home to cover that so that those are kind of the same. And then the mobile home park, we eliminated that and replaced that with manufactured housing development. Correct terms to identify these types of developments and reference that back to what the manufactured housing district talks about, because in that district it talks about manufactured housing development, so we want to make that match. So any questions about the definitions? All right. Then we moved on to Article 4, which is the traditional residential district. And now, just for brevity, I just included sections that were changed, if there's anything that sections not in this memo, they're not being changed. They're the same. So, for the principal permitted uses, the 420B would be added to include attached or detached accessory apartments, and C would be adding two family dwellings as uses by right. Those are currently additional uses in that district. So it's basically moving
Scott, could I stop you?
Sure.
So why only one accessory apartment per site? What if you had an accessory dwelling or unit and you had a lower level and an upper level? You know, a garage, say.
So like more of a multifamily unit where you have two or more?
Yeah, could be.
So, for the accessory units, we're going to just carry over what was already allowed as a conditional use, one accessory unit per site. And then when we get to the conditional uses, we talk about allowing multifamily units up to four units. So that could be more of a conditional use in that district. So moving down there, we looked at, we delete all that language. We're talking about the conditional uses of 4.3. We delete all the language about accessory units. And then replace it with multiple dwelling with a maximum of four units subject to the following. And the lot area must contain at least 2,500 square feet per unit. And then for some reason, my sentence got deleted on the second half of it. But number two should say units must be compatible with surrounding neighborhood character and aesthetics. So we want, if it's going to be a multifamily unit, it's got to fit in with the character of the neighborhood. Basically, it has to kind of look like a house, and you can do it. It's just got to make sure that it goes through a review process to accomplish that.
So, Scott, could I ask another question?
Sure.
So is this in a single-family residential area this could happen?
We're talking about the traditional residential district right now, and that encompasses pretty much most of the residential neighborhoods in the downtown area. You're basically down, you know.
Okay.
So yeah, but it'd be a special use, it'd be a condition, so you have to come to plan to actually get approval, and they have to meet those minimum size requirements, and then the character and aesthetics of the building would have to, you know, meet their requirement there.
Yeah, a little question on do two-family dwellings require greater minimum lot size, or
no?
So two-family dwelling could be built, a new class could be built in the same lot as a single family.
Yeah, and that's by right. That's the way the standard is right now under conditional use. So
under conditional use, right? So it just moves it from a conditional use to a use by right.
Right. So moving on. So then all that conditional use for the accessory and duplexes is all deleted out of that section 4.3. And then we move proposed amendments to Article 7. That's the manufactured housing park development district. So a lot of the language in here was just changing mobile home to manufactured. Kind of change that language, make that all match. There were some substantive changes in it. The lot area and density, and that was changed from 4,400 square feet to 5,500 square feet per unit to 10 units per acre. And that's roughly about 4,300 square feet per site. And that is about what we got going on at Lakeview right now. Those range in size from probably 3,300 to 4,400 square feet. So it seems to work, so we just want to make that a lot simpler and identify, you know, what that density could be. And then the open space requirements. The state act requires a minimum of 25,000 square feet of open space for any development that has over 50 spaces. Our ordinance included an additional requirement beyond those standards of having 10,000 square feet of active recreation space. Even though we don't define what that is, it was a requirement, and it seemed to be something of a barrier. So the Planning Commission decided to eliminate that aspect of it and just have our ordinance mimic the state requirement of 25,000 square feet of open space for development.
I have a question about that. Even though it wasn't well defined, the current ordinance says easily accessible, and that was struck from there just to 25,000 square feet. Was there any discussion about, you know, being able to meet that 25,000 square foot requirement by tucking, you know, unused piece here or there that really isn't functional?
Yeah, and that was kind of what the way we looked at it, as opposed to having one big piece. Let's look about being able to put it together to spaces throughout the park. And so it's not being contiguous, just having 25,000 square feet for the park was the better way to go.
I guess my point was that could you meet that requirement by having a little piece here?
Yeah.
That's not really accessible. It just, you'd use to satisfy the requirement, but it's not really usable for the residents.
Well, they don't really define open space well. You could call the sidewalks open space.
In the state act, you're talking about.
Yeah.
I see.
And so you're going to have to look at each case individually and say, you know, does that meet the intent of what we're looking for?
Identical in those. So,
with that, that is our first try at some amendments to reduce some barriers. We do have others that we're looking at. Parking is a big one, and the planning commission looks at, you know, reviewing those standards and see how they impact certain things. But I thought this was a good start. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to.
Thank you, Scott. Any comments from the staff? Any go to the public? All right. Let's go to more deliberation.
These are good, and I appreciate the work that the planning commission has done to plug away at reducing barriers to housing, and the amendments here certainly make a lot of sense. I'm wondering if there was any discussion or consideration of other residential housing types, like walk-ups and some others like garden apartments, and some of the things you hear about, if they, what do they call it, the missing middle or something like that, reviewing ordinance to ensure that those building types are at least possibilities as well.
We didn't talk so much about building types, but I think these do address that missing middle. At the housing summit, there was some data released for Manatee County, but it showed that the single family residential unit, you know, three bedrooms, two bath, is not the priority now. It's attached units, accessory units, and I think this kind of approaches that by allowing, you know, or looking at those kinds of units incorporating in the residential area. So I think we're on the right track to address those.
Great.
Sally?
So Scott, where do we go from here? So we would approve this possibly tonight and then a second reading, and then it would be adopted, it would be...
If you do approve the set of second reading, then we bring it back for the hearing and then possible adoption then. If there's changes or other things you want us to look at, you can refer it back to planning commission.
Did you feel like there was good community input, or that people were engaged, or?
Well, I think we've been talking about this housing a lot, and through various means, and through the housing, you know, summits we've had here. So I think we've had a lot of input, and so I think we're at the point where we've got enough information to address some changes. Mm-hmm. So that's the point we're at.
Good one. Thanks.
The only question I have looking at it is that this actually opens a door for granny flats.
Well, that door is already open through a special use permit process. The accessory dwelling units are currently allowed as a conditional use as an attached or detached unit. So people can do that now, but because it's a special use permit process, that is something of a barrier. Some people don't want to go through that process to go to the planning commission and notify the neighbors and have to go through that just to build this. So this makes it use by right a little bit easier for folks.
I like the term use by right. Mm-hmm. That's good. I'm good with the proposal.
Okay. Well, I've been involved being on the planning commission, and Scott's done exactly what we tasked him to do, is to go over all the ordinances to take away barriers to provide more housing opportunities. So again, an example of how our goals have set in motion the process, and it's hopefully going to create less barriers to provide more housing opportunities. So I'm in full support, and I appreciate Scott's work towards this, and it's just, it's simplifying and cleaning up our ordinances and just making it simpler so that it's easier, it's a tool to be used. So,
well, I would make a motion to approve the first reading of proposed amendments to the Boyne City Zoning Ordinance to potential barriers to housing development, and schedule a second reading for January 14th, 2020.
I'll second that.
Okay, first and second. Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Grunsch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Page.
Aye.
Solomon.
Aye.
Conklin.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thanks, Scott. Moving on to Main Street contract.
At the November Main Street meeting, the Main Street Board approved the agreement that is before you, and then it would also need to be approved by commission. The agreement would commit us to remaining a Main Street community through the end of December 2021. This may look familiar to you because we signed this agreement in January of this year that committed us to being a Main Street community through December of 2020. The MEDC is terminating those agreements, and the termination notice we've been notified is in the middle of page 6 on the new agreement that you have, section 3, number 6. They're terminating the agreement because all Michigan Main Street communities are now required to be at least at the engaged level of the Redevelopment Ready Community program. We were the first community in Michigan to be Main Street and RRC, so that portion doesn't affect us. It's just kind of staying with everything. That is outlined at the bottom of page 3 on numbers 13 and 14, the language related to RRC. There are a few other changes to the agreement from the one that we signed in January, which include language related to the design services that we receive from Michigan Main Street. That is at the top of page 5, number 6. This is helpful. We can now receive one design service per year instead of just what is left from our time at the select level. So Michigan Main Street used to just give you a set amount for the lifetime of your program, and once you used them, they were gone. So we were down to only having a couple since we've been in the street for quite a while. So now we will at least get one per year. The Main Street Board has talked a lot about this over the last few months. We first received an update in August and then another update in September. One of the things that was talked about the most was termination of the old contract, because it looks like in the old one that in order for that contract to be terminated, we would have had to receive a notice of termination at least 30 days before getting the new contract. And instead, the termination notice is in the new contract. So technically, if we don't sign it, we're not really agreeing that that's the termination notice. Ultimately, though, the board decided that our hands are kind of tied. If we want to remain a Main Street community, then we need to sign the new agreement. There's not anything in the new agreement that will hurt us. In order to maintain our status with National Main Street, we need to be part of a coordinating program. So the Main Street Board did recommend approval.
Thank you. Any comments from staff or the public? Yes, Mike.
This did generate a lot of discussion at the Main Street program, especially since we did enter into a new agreement, just as Kelsey said, in January, that hasn't expired yet. So this is kind of a unique situation for the Main Street program to basically replace the current agreement with a new agreement. Again, as Kelsey mentioned, the main reason they're doing that is to incorporate and make some requirements, tying the Main Street program in with the Redevelopment Ready Communities program. We were trendsetters with both of those programs, being one of the first 4 Main Street communities in the state, and being one of the first RRC communities, and as Kelsey mentioned, the first in the state to get both apparently. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of a trendsetter on this. It's, as she says, a lot of us on the Main Street board were kind of a little confused and by the process that the state went through it. Some of us don't think it was actually technically correct the way they did it. But again, as Kelsey's mentioned, there really isn't a harm to us with regards to it. The Main Street program has evolved a lot in the 16 years we've been a member of it as well, too. This is another evolution. I believe as a community, we've gained so much from the Main Street program that it's really helped us over the years to get us to where we're at today. So we're going on, hopefully with some good faith, that this too will work out.
Thank you, Mike.
Yes. Just kind of interesting for you guys, one community did leave because of this, and it was the only other community that was from the original class, like when we went in the first year that the state had it, so we're the only one left from the original group 16 years ago. But this was, they stated very clearly the reason that they left. They were not involved with RRC and didn't want to go down that path.
Okay. All right, let's go to the board. Sally?
So you're saying that we're the only ones left, but it all, I mean, I've never had anything but good feelings about the Main Street Board.
Yeah, there's a number of communities that have, you know, come and gone from the program. I think, what, there's like 24 communities in it now?
Yeah.
In that range. Some have left for financial reasons. Claire was another one where I think our initial class had dropped out. There are four communities initial. The most recent one that Kelsey's talking about now was the city of Portland. They just, and some other communities have real concerns about, I think it's philosophical concerns with regards to the RRC program and how the state is basically making community jump through RRC hoops and able to be able to get access to grants and things of that nature. Again, as Kelsey's mentioned, we kind of saw these trains coming years ago and lined ourselves up, so we're well positioned with regards to it. I think the vast majority of the communities that have become Main Street communities really see benefits from it. So I don't think there's anything real negative with regard to it. It's just a change with the RRC.
So it's a vast majority of those that have left because of what you were saying was?
No, just one has left since this new agreement came out. It's just that it was the community. So when we became a Main Street community in 2003, it was the first time that the state offered Main Street. And so from the original four communities that like adopted the Main Street approach in 2003 were the only one left. The only other one that was still in it up until now was Portland, and they left because of this new agreement.
I think the first four were us, Calumet, Portland, and Claire. Yeah. I'm trying to remember exactly why Calumet pulled out. That might have been financial reasons or... I think it was at the beginning. Because one of the requirements to becoming and maintaining Main Street membership is having a full-time staff person, and sometimes some communities have trouble maintaining that.
Okay, thank you. You?
I'm good.
Okay, Rob?
I'm good.
I'm good.
Okay, I am too. I would entertain a motion.
I'll move to approve the Boynton City, Michigan Main Street Program Community Requirements and Expectations Agreement and authorize the city manager to execute the documents.
Second.
Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Page?
Aye.
Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you, Kelsey. Moving on to item E, Fire Department ATV purchase.
The fire department fundraising for a while now tried to do a side-by-side ATV used in emergencies at avalanche, bike trails, in the parks and special events are going on or it'd be easier for us to get access. They should be able to come up with a proposed fee of about $35,000 to make this purchase. And recently we've had an anonymous donor come forward and we'll give us $20,000 for this purchase for this vehicle. So I think this would be a great situation. We'd have to purchase a trailer, put lights and sirens on, and get the slide-in medical unit, which would be the extra $15,000, which we do have on our fundraiser fund to make this purchase happen. So what we're looking for tonight is the voters proceed to get this purchase and approve the commission for this.
Now, is that the Department of Public Works has one too, correct, Tim?
Yes.
And will they be interchangeable, or are they really two different machines?
Be two different machines. They've got a John Deere, we're going to look at a Polaris.
We're going to outfit it with the emergency lights and the sliding medical unit.
And the unit up there, you can have a stretcher and a seat on it to carry your medical personnel in. We can also use it for grass fires and put personnel back there and carry brooms and ladders if you need that, and so forth. A lot of the other departments have them around here. We would purchase a trailer to keep it on, and we can take it to Avalanche or to the bike parks out at the old dump. And if we need it for mutual aid, so we can use it for that also.
Cool.
We're looking at purchasing it from Countrywide Power Sports in Harper Springs, which Aaron Richards is now our older man. He's been dealing with us on that, and it'd be interesting to be aligned.
So would the ambulance use it as well, then?
We would assist the ambulance with it, yes. Usually that's what the cot in the back would be for. The ambulance personnel would sit back there, and we would take one back in with us, paramedic or so forth, and he would be able to come back and administer first aid to them as we're getting back to the ambulance.
Has anybody walked a trail? Because they're just a single track trail, and I'm not sure you can get an ATV back in there.
We could do that, probably. We've talked to them before about maybe getting some emergency trails cut up in certain areas where we could maybe make quicker access to those points. I think Tim and them are markers that mark the trails and stuff. Let's do it.
With the number along the trail?
And now we got Boyne Thunder, the 4th of July, and we're
up right
on the parks, and we can get through there a lot quicker with stuff. We've had two or three incidents during the 4th of July and stuff out here where we've had some issues where you can't get a vehicles to them because of the crowds and stuff.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I'm just not sure on these single track trails, they get way off there,
how you have access. That is one problem we've been talking about, and to get better access to those areas. I know you won't be able to get down to all of them, maybe get some areas where we can get closer, then we would have to carry them out quite as far.
Yeah, going up the main trail, you have pretty good access to everything. Right. You could probably create a walking
trail. And if we get them marked like they're talking about, that would help too, and have a better idea where we go.
So where will it be stationed?
It'll be stationed at the fire department.
At the fire department.
Yeah, we'll put lights and sirens, and we'll put a decal on it, and we'll do it.
Is there any comments from staff or the public?
I have a question.
Yes. State your name, please.
Hi. Helene, a question for you. You mentioned some city-owned properties. Would you still be able to use that vehicle, say, up at the Hill Preserve and other
places? Yes, they're using it for any of the areas. All right. And mutual aid aspects.
Oh, that's really good to know. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's what I wanted to trade it for, so we can go to the mother.
Go farther. Okay.
Okay. Any other questions? Yes,
I think kudos need to be issued to both the fire department for their fundraising efforts to help provide additional resources for this, and to our anonymous donor for making that $20,000 contribution to make this feasible at this time. Again, there's no direct city funds that are beginning to be paid to purchase this. Obviously, we're looking at insurance on it and things of that nature to help support it, but if this is a great acquisition.
Thank you. I agree. You?
I'm good.
Okay. Ron?
I make a motion that we purchase the ATV side by side.
Hold on, that motion. Let's hear
it. Okay.
Anything with Sally? Now I'll take your
motion. Okay.
Okay. I
make a motion that we purchase the ATV side by side.
Second.
You have a second? Any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Paige? Solomon?
Aye.
Conklin?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
Any Moving on to item F, employee health insurance, health savings account contribution.
Yes, every year about this time, our employee, we receive employee insurance quotes for the coming year. For the last several years, the increases for health insurance have been in about the 5% or less range. This is much better than the regular double digits and increases we were seeing prior to that. This year, the proposed increase for our health insurance was pretty much close to double digit at 9%. There were no increases for our dental or optional vision coverages. Each year, we have our representative Denise from Cortez Flynn, and Denise is here with us tonight. I'll review our options with representatives of our full-time employees who receive these benefits. They look at options from our current carrier, who is Priority Health, and also check the market to see if there's other providers, Blue Cross, McLaren, et cetera, if they have competitive plans that we may wish to consider. There were no other competitive plans that were worth us considering for any price or coverage advantages. Priority Health, as you can see on the attached pages, I'll be breaking some of those up, have a variety of options and various coverages at different price levels. Our employees are generally satisfied with the coverages that we've had through Priority Health. It is a high deductible plan, and the city makes an annual contribution to the employees who have it to their health savings accounts. The current plan is listed on the top of page 3 as item A, and more detailed on all of page 5. To maintain our current coverage, with a minor tweak to provide additional chronic medical coverages, would lead us to renew with the options shown on page 3 as B, or PH1. In reviewing all the options, we determined that by moving to Plan C, which is identified as PH 8 on page 4, then implementing the city employee cross-sharing as shown as C in the middle of that page, we can provide employees similar final dollar coverage to what they have now under our current coverage, with smaller increases for both the employee and the city. We would accomplish this by taking much of the savings the city would get by going into option PH8 and sharing that with covered employees by increasing their HSA contributions by $250 per year per employee-only coverage and $500 for employees with two-person or family coverages. This also decreases the amount by switching to PH8 versus PH1. Increases the amount of the employee's increased cost from $107 to $42 about for an employee only, or for two-person coverage from $236 to $82, or for family coverage from $295 to $78. Everyone that has this coverage in the city still pay more, but by switching the plans to PH8, the increases are much less and the overall year-end benefits remain similar to what we have now. It's a more complicated way to get there than just accepting the PH1 option and paying the 9%, but we believe this is the best way to go and worth trying for at least the coming year. That is what the Employee Review Committee and myself is recommending that we implement for the year ahead. So it is our recommendation that the City Commission authorize the City Manager and the City Clerk Treasurer to take the steps necessary to move to the Priority Health Insurance option identified as PH8 and identify the City's, and increase the City's annual health insurance account contributions by $250 and $500 per covered employee, per category, until we change it at some point in the future. So, if we stay with this plan for the coming years, we wouldn't necessarily come back to the City Commission to renew it next year, but if we made a significant change, then we would bring it back like we're doing now. So, and there were lots of charts included, and hopefully I didn't get you lost by trying to take you through these plans. Again, on this sheet here, option at the top there, A is what we currently have, B is basically a straight increase with the PH1, and that's 9.1% overall. And what we're recommending that we go with is C at the bottom of this page, PH8, This is page 4 in your packet. And using the savings there compared to the price increases, and spread that out to reduce the employee contributions and increase the HSA contributions. So, again, Denise is here to translate all this, and she did a great job putting these spreadsheets together for us to look at. But if you want a professional's expertise to deal with it, she's here. Cindy was also in on those meetings as well, of the people that are here tonight.
Thank you. Denise?
Yes.
Would you like to add any comments?
No, I think Mike gave a good explanation and answer any questions. They are increasing exposure and offsetting some of that and using the savings to add to the employee's HSA bank account. So it's a very nice trade-off to take it's about a 9% increase and cutting that down to about a third of that.
Okay. Commissioners, any questions for Denise, or we'll go into, we'll keep you in case we have any questions. Staff members, how this affects you, any comments from staff and or the public? Rob?
The only question I have is how this HSA works. If somebody, you know, doesn't have any claims or anything, does the balance roll over every year and increases? Is there a cap on it?
There's no cap. Yes, it does roll over, but there is no cap on how much can accumulate.
Okay. Thank you.
Each employee that's covered under this plan has their own individual HSA account. We put money into that. And the employee, many of them also put money on their own. That's their account, and that stays with them forever until they spend it out. It is supposed to be used for medical purposes only, or otherwise it may be tax implications.
Is that still in effect after they retire also?
Yes. That money is theirs until they use it up.
Memo comment about employees being involved in reviewing options?
Yes.
And is that like a lot of employees or just a few?
We have representatives from there's probably about 6 or 8 people around the table. We have a couple people from each department. We have representatives of the police department, non-union employees, DPW, basically the ASME bargaining unit. So we try to have a representative from each of those. We've had multiple meetings on this topic. We gave them information so they could go talk to the people that they represent, and they came back with questions and comments, and there was broad support for going to this option.
That's a really good thing, I think, involving employees. I'm not sure every organization would do that, get their employees involved and trying to sort through some of the options for trying to reduce the impact on employees in the city as a result of increases in healthcare. So it's a commendable practice on the part of the city.
Yeah, we've been doing this for quite some time now, really since we were dealing with some of those double-digit increases a while ago, because it really became a painful issue. And we thought, let's get everybody's input up there, and you know, more lines at the table, the better.
Yeah, the only other comment is sort of a one-time thing. So you can't change the plan every year in order, you can't pull this trick every year, right? So that in the future, if there are those larger increases, we might not have quite as good an opportunity to minimize those increases as we did this year.
That's possible, or there may be new opportunities. Who knows? Again, the group thought it was worth giving it a try for this year. And we do have the option, if for some reason this doesn't pan out the way we anticipate, we could go back to the old program also. Of course, we'd have to absorb that increase somewhere along the way.
Yeah, I too would have loved this, the involvement with employees. Is that committee used in other issues or just for this health care?
This one is just specifically for health care.
Do we have it in the budget to be able to handle the increase? I mean, was that,
we will.
Was that anticipated?
No, not at this point. I think we budgeted just for the 5%. The vast majority of this will be in next fiscal year's budget anyway.
That's all, thanks.
Okay. I'm in support. Thank you, Denise.
So are you ready for a motion, Mr. Mayor?
I am, yes.
I motion that the City Commission authorize the City Manager and City Clerk Treasurer to take the steps necessary to move priority health insurance option identified as PH8 and increase the City's annual health savings account contributions by $250 and $500 per covered employee per category until change.
Discussion. Roll call, please.
Salomon.
Aye.
Conklin.
Aye.
Grunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Page.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you. Commissioners, anything for good of the order? Dean? Sally? You?
Thank you.
Okay. Okay. The next regular City Commission meeting is scheduled for November 26th. The offices will be closed on Thanksgiving, Friday right after the 29th. And thanks everyone for coming. It's 8:26. I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Thanks, everybody.